You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. I'm Ava Berardi. Much of Tillamook County's solid waste isn't disposed of in the county, but now the out-of-town landfill it uses is running out of space, and Tillamook County leaders are contemplating the future of solid waste management. The county currently disposes 44,000 tons of solid waste to the Coffin Butte landfill in Adair Village, north of Corvallis. The landfill has been controversial, as Republic Services, the company that operates it, sought to expand its capacity. Benton County commissioners denied the expansion in March, after the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality announced an enforcement action against the landfill. Republic Services has appealed the decision, but Tillamook County Solid Waste Program Manager Justin Weiss says he's not counting on the expansion coming to fruition. Weiss says the landfill will run out of capacity in the next 10 to 15 years. It's a significant issue for the seven counties that use the landfill. There is no other landfill open west of the Cascades. Weiss says a legislative task force is examining ways the counties can pool resources to cut down costs associated with transporting waste to eastern Oregon. The task force is expected to submit a legislative proposal for consideration in the next year's long session. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Tillamook Headlight Herald. Online at tillamookheadlightherald.com. An open pit in downtown Astoria might be inching closer to a solution. Astoria officials are waiting on approval from the Environmental Protection Agency to start looking for an environmental professional to develop cleanup plans for the pit at Heritage Square. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have linked the types of chemicals found in the soil in the pit to harm caused to the central nervous system and internal organs. Project manager Sarah Hammond says that most of the contamination was removed in 2012, but that covering the contaminated area will help seal the deal. The project is expected to be completed in 2028, but Astoria Public Works Director Jeff Harrington says the timeline could pick up pace depending on available contractors. When the covering is complete, the filled pit is expected to become a park, an extension of the nearby Garden of Surging Waves. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Daily Astorian, online at dailyastorian.com. An Oregon drinking water system was hacked late last month. Governor Tina Kotek's office confirmed the breach Friday, but would not say which of the state's 2,500 water districts was attacked. This comes as the New York Times reports that Iran has instigated cyber attacks on drinking water systems in at least seven U.S. states. The FBI says hackers are accessing water system computers, and in some cases that's resulted in water pressure drops or flooding. Oregon officials say they're working with federal law enforcement to investigate the attack, and they're still assessing possible harm to the hacked water district.
This is KMUN. I'm Katie Frankowitz. Port Orford is moving forward with plans to address major problems in its aging water system, which is leaking about 3 million gallons a year. JPR's Theo Greenlee reports city officials are racing to overhaul the system before more of it fails.
Port Orford's water treatment plant dates to the late 1970s. Officials say some equipment is obsolete and old distribution lines are leaking. Public Works Superintendent John Isidore says the plant's malfunctioning filtration system costs the city more than $60,000 a year.
The plant's running itself to death.
The city is currently studying whether major parts of the treatment plant should be repaired or replaced. Councilors voted unanimously to pursue state funding for up to $6.7 million in state-administered funding. Up to one and a half of that could be forgiven, with the rest offered as a low-interest loan. I'm Theo Greenlee in Port Orford.
It's county fair season in Oregon. That means people across the state are coming together to celebrate their community's agricultural heritage. But many of this year's fairs are being blanketed by a heavy layer of smoke from wildfires across Oregon and Washington. OPB reporters visited fairs in Prineville and Baker City this week. Antonio Sierra has more.
It's a competition day at the Crook County Fair. Children run around a pop-up science tent trying to solve a giant brain teaser. Megan Jones is there with a pig named Dexter, raised by her 12-year-old daughter.
She loves it. I tell you, it was a lot of work, a lot of hard work, a lot of dedication, a lot of learning, and but she loves it.
Jones is excited for her child to show the animal and 4-H competitions, but she and her family aren't exactly having fun at the fair.
We have headaches and we're coughing. It's miserable, but we take breaks. We have our trailer here, so we go in and turn on the air and take some breaks.
Over the past few weeks, Central and Eastern Oregon have had some of the worst air quality in the world as wildfires rage across the region. Whether out of a sense of tradition, obligation, or affection, people are still going to county fairs, which double as celebrations of agriculture and local economic drivers. Linda Smith is one of the organizers behind the Crook County Fair.
We're having a free breakfast for the veterans in the morning, and I'm worried about that because they're older and more health problems.
Crowds are sparse. A man rides a full-grown longhorn steer down a row of tents without anyone getting in the way of the animal's horns. Smith says a few vendors had already dropped out because of the smoke.
This is a really bad year. I mean, we've had fires before, but nothing quite this bad, I don't think.
Humans aren't the only fairgoers feeling the effects of the smoke. 200 miles away at the Baker County Fair in Eastern Oregon, air quality conditions are better, but not by much.
All right, I'm going to start with the calf. I just think it's the most balanced calf, most complete calf out of this class.
A judge is appraising dozens of steers, including one named Maverick, raised by 13-year-old Shelby Marks. The pair were fresh off a victory in their weight class. Shelby was proud of her calf, but admitted that it was challenging to raise him in the months leading up to the competition.
Before the smoke, they were eating perfectly fine, but ever since that, he's just gotten more picky. And
Baker County has been the site of several major fires this summer. Shelby says she took to feeding Maverick more often to make up for the effects of the smoke.
I'm dealing with it fine. I've really just adapted to it, but I feel that it's not good for our animals.
Brothers Bryce and Ryan Thompson stand by the cattle pens as Ryan's steer Oscar tries to tug him in a different direction.
And they used to eat everything, but as soon as the smoke started, they stopped eating all of it.
Ryan says the Thompson family has been dealing with more than just smoke.
We have a bunch of cows that are up by the fire, so the smoke and the fire both kind of affected us because some of our cows are getting like burnt up.
Times are tough, but the boys are all smiles after the competition. Both of their steers take home blue ribbons. Antonio Sierra, reporting from Baker City.
You're listening to news on KMUN, turning now to stories out of Washington State. Many Spokane wildfire evacuees are getting the news they've been waiting for. County authorities have lowered some evacuation levels from level 3, or go now, to level 1, or be ready. Other areas remain in level 3. Incident Commander Tom Klimo says teams will don hazmat suits for the next few days to check some of the areas remaining in level 3. As for the people allowed to return, Health District Medical Officer Frank Velasquez is warning them to take it slow.
We want all residents, as they return, to take the time to carefully examine all the environment around them before they proceed. For homes that are standing and have no obvious fire damage, you still have to think about smoke, ash, damaged utilities, and other hazards before settling back in.
The Red Cross is offering free kits with clothing such as Tyvek suits, N95 masks, and eye protection for residents to pick up before they return home. Those are available at the Disaster Assistance Center at Shadle Park High School. That's scheduled to remain up and running at least through Wednesday.
Residents in Spokane, Washington are facing the impacts of still-burning fires that razed hundreds of homes and forced tens of thousands of people to evacuate. For some residents, emergency information in Spanish has been a lifeline. As Monica Criocasas reports, Latino-led community organizations are filling that role while people deal with the losses.
On a hot afternoon, the first Saturday of this month, Heidi Solis' children were playing outside when she went to check on them. Then she noticed smoke moving quickly toward their Spokane home. Solis opened an app on her phone that tracks fires. She saw flames had jumped to just blocks away.
Ya estaban cayendo ashes. Y el humo estaba demasiado cerca ya de nosotros.
Ash was falling on us, and the smoke was getting closer to us.
She and her husband quickly gathered their 3-year-old daughter and 5-year-old son, grabbed a handful of clothes, and packed 2 photos of the kids. They sat trapped in traffic with a nearly empty tank of gas. They could see the smoke rolling behind them, and then...
Las casas de enfrente empezaron a explotar.
The houses in front of us started to explode.
As they got out, Solis held on to hope that their home would be spared, but when she returned the next day, she found everything they owned had been reduced to ash. Their home was among more than 850 buildings in the Spokane area to burn down in a series of fires. Solis has been turning to Spanish language resources to get help and figure out what's next. Latino-led community organizations have stepped in to reach people like her directly. KYRS is a small community radio station operated out of a library. Its 1 Spanish language program has become a lifeline for residents impacted by the fires. On air, hosts Rafa Zamora and Samantha Peralta move quickly, trading updates, repeating phone numbers, and making sure listeners don't miss critical information. When the microphones turn off, the pace doesn't slow down. They scan messages, compare notes, and adjust their next segment in real time.
Necesitamos y merecemos estar informados en nuestro idioma.
We need and deserve to be informed about everything that is happening in our own language.
As fires spread across Spokane, Zamora tripled the airtime for the show, El Puente La Voz Latina, or in English, The Bridge, The Latino Voice. It's the only local program of its kind for over a 100-mile radius. Zamora says he's working closely with Latino-led community organizations to connect people with resources, groups like Mujeres in Action, Latinos in Spokane, or Nuestras Raíces. At a warehouse office near downtown Spokane, tables are lined up with fuzzy blankets, diapers, masks, and other necessities. Nuestras Raíces operations manager Isabel Mascot says the organization began doing Facebook Live updates to reach people.
One mom came in with her 6-month baby the very first hour that we opened on Monday since we went live on Facebook. And she was here. She lost everything, so she needed some diapers, and we were able to give that.
Solis, another mother who evacuated with her kids right ahead of the fire, says Nuestras Raíces connected her with a counselor so she could help her children understand what happened to their house.
Tenemos que hablarles y decirles, ¿sabes qué? Pues ahora nuestro hogar somos nosotros.
We have to talk to them and tell them, you know what? Now our home is us.
Solis and her husband own Los Habaneros, a Mexican restaurant in North Spokane. She says their days are filled by keeping the restaurant open and trying to give her kids a sense of normalcy. It's at night when she finally has the moment to sit with her thoughts that the reality of losing her home sinks in.
Porque es cuando quisiera regresar a mi casa y no, ya no hay regreso.
Solis says she wishes she could go back to her house, but there's no going back anymore. Having help from the community is what has helped her maintain hope. I'm Monica Carrillo Casas, reporting.
Air operations continue to be disrupted by drones flying over restricted areas near wildfires. As the Mountain West News Bureau's Murphy Woodhouse reports, destructive blazes in Spokane are the latest example of the dangerous trend.
Officials say that on a single day, more than 21 drone incursions into a temporary flight restriction area around the devastating Spokane blazes were detected. Brad Keckerts is division chief for uncrewed aircraft systems at the Federal Wildland Fire Service. He talked to the Bureau in general about the risks.
One, it's a risk to the aviation personnel, and then two, it's risk to folks on the ground, both the firefighters and the public, not having the air support that they need in order to suppress that fire.
Through July 20th, officials had logged 19 wildfire drone incursions. There were 53 last year, the highest figure in 4 years of data available. He says federal officials are actively working to better detect drones and find their operators who could be subject to civil and criminal penalties. I'm Murphy Woodhouse, the Mountain West News Bureau reporter at Boise State Public Radio.
U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs Secretary Doug Collins visited Seattle's VA Medical Center on Friday. KNKX's Anna Marie Yanni reports he wants to advance psychedelic research here.
The VA has been working to expedite psychedelic research following an executive order President Donald Trump issued this spring. At his visit to the VA Puget Sound healthcare system, Secretary Collins says some of that research is happening here, namely testing the psilocybin drug that's in magic mushrooms for treatment-resistant depression.
If it helps, and it's sort of been my philosophy, if it helps one of our veterans, we're going to try.
Collins says he's also working to reduce what he sees as red tape at VA hospitals.
Taking away the stupid stuff that we do a lot of times, like filling out paperwork that nobody else would fill out, doing the questions nobody else would do. Why? Because we got so concerned about protecting ourselves that we forgot about we're taking care of veterans.
Seattle's VA is one of five across the country recruiting veterans for the psilocybin trial. I'm Anna Marie Yanni reporting.
You're listening to KMUN. Local and regional news is brought to you by our news partners and by the KMUN News Department. That includes host and production assistant Ava Berardi and me, news director Katie Frankowitz. For more local and regional news, visit kmun.org/news. Up next, the American Democracy Minute. You're listening to KMUN.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. On the 61st anniversary of the 1965 Voting Rights Act, Delaware enacted a state VRA prohibiting voter discrimination, suppression, and vote dilution. Virginia's governor signed legislation to expand its VRA and lay the groundwork for automatic voter registration in the Commonwealth. August 6th, Delaware Governor Matt Meyer signed House Bill 444, the Delaware John Lewis Voting Rights Act, prohibiting discrimination in voting, but also establishing a democracy canon, instructing election officials, state agencies, and the judicial branch to, quote, construe the election laws in favor of protecting and making accessible the right to vote, unquote. The extensive bill prohibits voter suppression and intimidation, the dilution of votes through gerrymandering, and provides for civil actions when discrimination occurs. The same day, Virginia Governor Abigail Spanberger expanded the Commonwealth's state VRA with the signing of 10 bills. The legislation includes provisions strengthening statutes prohibiting voter suppression, extending the cure process for absentee and provisional ballots, improving voter roll maintenance, laying the groundwork for automatic voter registration to make it more convenient for citizens to register, and other pro-voter provisions. Delaware joins Virginia and 10 other states with state-level VRAs. We've linked to the new legislation at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.